Hey kiddos, welcome to PWT Talks NXT, the only NXT podcast anywhere. That's probably not true, but we are a really good NXT podcast. And I'm your host, Kelly Wells. I write the NXT tracker for The Torch. Normally I've got two guys with me. I do only have one. We thought this was an important enough show, we were just going to roll with the A-Team. But since the A-Team wasn't available, me and Justin are here instead. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce Justin James to you.
Hi, I'm Justin underscore M underscore James at Twitter, The Torch's NXT TV correspondent. And I'll have to say that being called not the A-Team is sure a lot better what you called me last week before the show started.
I work heel a lot before the show goes on.
So do I.
Yeah, we both do. We are, we're both a little bit of crapsters is what we are. So yeah, we'll see if we can work any of that into the narrative tonight. We'll see. Lots of things going on the show again. Four matches, three short ones and one decently long one. And some more good backstage and yeah, I don't know. They're bringing more of it out to ringside too, which I think is kind of fun. So doing a little bit of that as well. So you can get a hold of us, pwtorchnxt at gmail.com. Many of you did that this week. We've got six emails to get through, two of them about the names. Last week I made a call for better names for the War Raiders. Two guys gave us a total of 12 names that that are better. A few of them are cheeky and intentionally silly, but yeah, we'll have some fun with those too. And we got four other emails, and we will tackle them all because they're mostly about people on this episode. I do also want to mention that right now, tonight, right this second, Tom is our guy Tom Staupe is at a recording for or at the taping for the next set of NXT shows. He did mention that Lacey Evans has new music, so I'm not saying they all listen to the show, but they'll probably listen to the show.
Spoiler. That was probably the most important thing that would come out of next set of tapings, and you just spoiled it for you. Do work heel.
If that's the most important thing that came out of the set of tapings going
based on the quantity of emails that we get on that, I think the only other thing we get more emails on is possibly Adam Cole.
You know, that's probably true. Yeah, you know what? You know, maybe that's
Carly's
maybe
probably that's a spoiler. Got stats on
I don't
this.
Know what the music is yet, so so we'll withhold. But can it be worse? I'm gonna say probably not.
It could be worse.
Yeah, it's possible, but I don't know. We'll maybe we'll think of our worst theme musics of all time. Throw that on a future show. Let's go ahead and start with the main event: Cassius Ohno versus Tommaso Ciampa. Was somewhat stiff and hard-hitting, as we thought it would be. Gave us the finish that we thought we'd get. I also have an email that I'm going to go ahead and read as I go into this, because I think it's something that'll be a talking point. This is from one of our regulars, Brian Elston. I do that a lot. Brian from Phoenix, senior PW Torch VIP subscriber. Number one, if Tom is present, how can I get NXT tickets? Check WWE.com and tickets for June were sold out. Tom is not present, obviously, but he'll be listening, so he'll take a look at this. And Brian, Tom can get a hold of you, maybe, and maybe if we remember, Tom can take a note and he'll bring that up on the show. I don't know what his means for getting tickets quickly is. Okay, number two from Brian. I'd pop if EC3 at any time mentions Aunt Dixie or Auntie D. I don't know if they are going to. Do you think there's any chance, Justin, that they will reference Dixie Carter? And we've lost Justin. Okay, well, we got me. Justin, I assume you're muted. Number three, if Montez Ford and Bianca Belair have a child, it would be the world's first superpowered human. Yeah, last week I apparently stopped short of superpowered human. I said the most charismatic person in the world. But yes, yeah, superpowered. I'm on board. I'm on board with that. And number four, Mauro was on fire calling Ciampa versus Ohno. And this is the reason that I brought this up now. I completely agree. And the one note that I took was Morrow's disgust here. He was very angry about the outcome of this match, and that is something we don't hear in wrestling enough. He actually dropped out, damn it, just at the result of this match when Ciampa beat Ohno, and it really gave this match a sense of weight. Like, it'll all be okay if somebody just defeats the scourge that is Tommaso Ciampa. Justin, do I have you back?
Yep. Sorry about that.
No.
I thought that this match, like you said, hard-hitting, as you'd expect from seeing Ciampa and Ohno's name on the card. It was really, really intense. And I, like you said about Renault, I loved the way he worked it. He did this thing where it was a slow evolution throughout the match, right? Where he said, you know, near the beginning, he says, it's hard for me to maintain my neutrality in this match. Ciampa's disgusting. And then culminating, you know, with him being just furious at the match finish. Though if he was surprised, I'd say he doesn't watch enough of the product.
Right.
But, I mean, Rinaldo just really put this over well. Watson did not sabotage it at all with any of those, you know, with any of that wishy-washy, well, a win's a win kind of stuff. Yep. You know, Watson reinforced those points. You knew the match finish would be what it was. But Ohno was surprisingly competitive, and he really showed, you know, that he was angry and morally outraged at Tommaso Ciampa and that he wanted to hurt Ciampa, and he did. So I just really liked this match. I thought it was very well done.
Yeah, I really like this, and something I like about Ohno matches is that we do know how they're going to finish, but he always gets in enough hope spots that it's – there's almost a little bit of belief that sets in, and you're like, they could do something with this if he beat Ciampa. Like, it would still work storyline-wise for both guys, because, I mean, there's nothing wrong with giving a win occasionally to Ohno, and Ciampa he's all about completely snapping and being evil right now. Yeah. Now, they kept it simple, and they went the way we thought they would, but Ohno seems to be immune to the squash. He does not lose squash matches, even though he loses almost all the time. And I think that's a good place for him to be. I think somebody buried in their emails, and we'll get to this later, asked about what they should do with Cassius Ohno. I think what they should do with Cassius Ohno is what they're doing right now. He's not in the kind of shape they want out of a guy who's going to carry the torch and be the top guy in the company. That's not going to happen, I don't think, right now. And he's also on the downturn of his career, and I think he is doing what he is there to do. I know I've said this before, but I absolutely still think that's true, and I think that's great. I still look forward to his work, and I think that he's doing primarily what he should be doing. So that was Ohno and Ciampa, and that's I think all I've got to say on it, unless you want to call out any other things from this match.
No, I just really enjoyed it. And Mauro Ranallo, thank you. Did a great job tonight.
Yes, another excellent, excellent job by Mauro. Let's talk about Ricochet and Dream. This was a long opening non-wrestling segment. We don't see that a lot on this show. So 14 minutes, I want to say it went, that it was these two guys talking at each other. Ricochet, okay-ish on the mic. Dream, excellent on the mic. Good stuff. And this was the feud that a lot of, I want to say maybe all four of us predicted for Ricochet once he showed up. I don't know if it matters who wins this match. I think both of these guys are going to be fine regardless of the outcome of this match, but it's going to be dynamite. And I am also going to read I have two emails about this, and let me go ahead and say this, do this first one from Josh Dolly, one of our regs. What's up, gang? The show never fails to give me my analysis on NXT for the week. Keep up the good work. On last week's Velveteen Dream discussion, I agree that it's best not burn out the character, but I miss seeing the Velveteen Dream. After his great performance in the ladder match, what do you think is next in line for him? I'm going to say a Ricochet match. Spoiler. Do you think he gets with the Undisputed Era for the North American title? Do you think he gets put in the NXT title picture? Do you think he could be used to help a guy like Kona Reeves' character get over? I feel like they would have some good segments together. I would love to maybe spend a minute on that, because I think Kona could really benefit from Dream, and it hopefully wouldn't be Kona being dragged down by Dream. I think that is the kind of, like, Dream comes across as a truly, like, a fashion plate kind of guy, and Kona Reeves, the character, wants to but isn't, and I think that could be very funny if they want to do that with Dream. But I think that's playing with fire, because you don't want to kill Dream's momentum by having him in a comedy side act. But
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
Dream is such a serious character. I mean, he's funny, and he's, you know, he makes jokes, and he is funny, right? There's things about his character that are funny and comedic, but he is not a comedy act. And anything that you would do with Kona Reeves, where, like, he's like Kona Reeves' Dream's apprentice or something, and that brings us into, like, Titus Worldwide territory.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to go ahead with the other email that is largely about this. This is from Chris Fielder. Hey, guys. I apologize for the long email ahead of time. So after watching the Ricochet Velveteen Dream segment, he sent this one into the show, I started thinking, has there ever been another gimmick as perfect for a person as Velveteen Dream? Besides Mark Calloway as The Undertaker, I think Patrick Clark Jr. is the perfect person to portray the character of Velveteen Dream. I honestly thought when he was first announced as the Dream that it would be a total flop. Wrestling hasn't been overly supportive of his type of character in the past, but I think this time it's special. I cannot think of a more perfect combination of person and character. Just wondering, what do you guys think, and how impressed are you all with Patrick pulling this character off so brilliantly? I think the sky is the limit for him. Before I get to the rest of Chris's email, I don't know how far back Chris goes with our show, but I think we're all pretty well in agreement about that, that the sky really is the limit. Dream might be just about my favorite guy on any part of the WWE roster, and I know that I've said that the marriage of character and portrayer is absolutely dynamite here, because it was only a short break-in period where he wasn't quite there. He was completely committed to this character within just a week or two. A handful of weeks, or maybe one taping. I don't know what it was, but it didn't take long, and I think this is dynamite, absolute dynamite. And I think that's the reason we don't always see him, because I'm not opposed to a guy occasionally not being on TV. If you don't have something for him, don't just put him out, trot him out there and have him lose or even win a meaningless match.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harlaw talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about, like, the press conferences and stuff like that. They just, someone tells them, like, all right, now it's your turn to go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say that this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
What do you think, Justin, on the entire character and the direction it's headed?
Oh, man. Velveteen Dream is like my Haagen-Dazs ice cream of wrestlers. Like, he's like so rich and high calorie, and I love it. And if I could eat this thing like every day, I would, but I know I'd get sick and fat. And I'm grateful to enjoy him in moderation.
Yeah.
But when I do have that dream on my plate, whoo, I am just so happy. I think that we have quite literally used the phrase "the sky's the limit" with regards to Velveteen Dream and Patrick Clark countless occasions.
Yeah.
That exact phrase. Yeah. We're all in agreement. I love this character. There's just something about it. And I think one of the things that really clicked here this time around, right? Because as Chris has said in his email, you know, we've seen this kind of character before, and wrestling hasn't been overly supportive of it. And I think a big difference is the combination of the presentation and the announcer reaction, and that they, you know, they had that first tapings worth, right? Where, like you said, Dream wasn't really committed, but at the same time, announcers were using the word ambiguous and flamboyant a lot.
Yep.
And they dropped that after the first taping. And I think that removing that touch of homophobia, frankly, from the presentation.
Yeah.
And just treating it straight up, you know, saying he's, you know, charismatic, enigmatic, etc., focusing on those parts of his characters rather than this sexual aspect of his character, I think has made such a big difference in the acceptance, because it's not, oh, look at this guy, he's sexually different. Yeah. He's weird, he's creepy because of that.
Yeah, the announcers don't have to talk about how weird it is. And, I mean, that's what they did. I mean, Ross and Lawler talked a lot about how weird Goldust was solely for that reason. But if you take a look at Ring of Honor, a guy like Dalton Castle, that isn't something that's mentioned. They talk about the weirdness of Dalton Castle because Dalton Castle is weird, but they don't talk about it in terms of that part of his presentation. So, yeah, this is... I want to say Tom thought that he heard one homophobic slur at one taping, but I mean, this is vastly different from when I was a kid in the late 80s, early 90s, and the ways that you would just hear the real F word chanted at shows, and just how unfortunate and sad that was. So, yeah, that's kind of a tangent I didn't expect us to go on, but I suppose it was natural if we were going to talk about this part of the Dream's character. So, yeah, you will not hear any argument from us, Chris Fielder, about how high that this guy can go. I said early on, I don't think that he's eventually a main event player or anything, but I think that he's going to have a great career. At this point, I wouldn't write off the main event. I just don't know how far that character gets when Vince has more input. That's the only thing that worries me.
Yes, and the question on Dream's upper end on main roster is, does Vince have a heart attack before Triple H takes, you know, before Dream, does Triple H take over main roster before or after this guy hits it?
Right. Maybe that's why we're getting him in moderation. They're like, we cannot waste this guy.
Yeah. If you are a Velveteen Dream fan, pray for Vince to get the big one. Because Vince will, I can hear it in my head already, the things that Corey Graves and Michael Colby produced to say about Velveteen Dream, the promos that will be done, Dream will be shredded within a couple months of hitting the main roster. He'll become Fandango's sidekick on the Fashion Police.
Yeah. Right, right. There's a lot that could go wrong for him up there. It's
that's what happened to Breeze.
Right.
The Breeze character was another one of these characters that, you know, had a sexual aspect to it.
Right.
He hits the main roster, and this was a guy that was a perennial upper mid card threat.
Yeah.
On NXT, and did a very good job. We didn't have the.
And they took their time with him. He worked his ass off. He got better. He got into some good matches, had some good long-form matches, was in that great four-way with Sammy, Neville, and... I should remember the fourth, but I don't right now. Tyson Kidd. Yep. This was post-Bo, just barely post-Bo. But yeah, this was, it was, oh, it was a great, it was the show called Fatal Four Way, just a match that I go back to every now and then and absolutely adore. But haven't gone back to in a while, obviously, because I couldn't come up with Kid, who was a really, really important part of that whole four-person feud.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was on fire then. Miss that guy. Also, Chris Fielder added, what do you think the WWE brass should do with Chris Hero / Cassius Ohno? I'm still in the middle of watching the show, but I'm going to go ahead and predict that Ciampa goes over Ohno hands down. I think he would be better served as a main roster mid-card player. What do you guys think? I don't know. I think this, as well as putting him up there and being in the mid-card, either way works. I think that his win-loss record will look similar either way. I really think he would suffer more on the main roster. I think if he's kept on NXT, he'll be around in the company longer than if he goes up to the main roster. I just think on the main roster, he'll do jobs for 6 to 8 months and he'll be gone.
The problem is that his role in NXT is so predictable.
Right.
And like, he either needs a win. Like if tonight he had picked up a win, it would have added just enough unpredictability, right? Because NXT booking, one of the things I like about it is they occasionally surprise you. They'll do the face versus face match much more often than main roster will. And sometimes they'll pull a finish where you say, well, that's not the booking. Or it's not a screwy finish. It's just, like, I'm surprised that guy went over.
Yeah.
Finish. They have to do that with Ohno soon. They have to start mixing up because it's just too predictable.
Yeah. I think a large part of his role there, too, is actually backstage. I continue to assume that a guy with that much experience compared to most of those kids who are just on their way up, I've got to assume they can learn a lot from guys who have had as many great matches over the years as Chris Hero. So that's probably part of why he's there. Not that they don't have those guys who do that, but it's good to have them, one of them be one of the boys, you know, because they can relate to him on a different level.
Yeah, I mean, basically what he's on the Fit Finley career path.
Sure. And Finley was a good mid-card player for a while, and he got his wins here and there. He was last person eliminated once in an Elimination Chamber match. He did his thing every now and then.
I think Finley was wrestling up until he was about 50-something, and Chris Hero is, I want to say, 38, 39, right around there.
Yeah, he's right there. So, he still doesn't look like he's old and getting there, like he has to quit. He doesn't look as young as Shayna Baszler, but she's aging more gracefully than anybody in wrestling.
I want to know what her secret is.
Right. I don't know. Ass kicking. She's probably like stealing the life force of the people she's beating down. Like that's the only explanation. She's
like Dakota Kai's gonna be 80. Gonna look 80 by the end of this feud, and Shayna Baszler's gonna look 18.
What am I gonna say then? I'll be like, okay, I'm still in love with Dakota Kai, but it's getting weird. If it wasn't weird already, it is now that she's 80. All right, so. That was Ricochet Dream. Thank you, Josh and Chris, for the emails. We dig it when you email us, and you guys do it a lot. So we got Heavy Machinery versus the War Raiders. This was brief. This was third match on the show. We got, again, what we thought we'd get. War Raiders did a couple of their signature spots, but kept it light and gave us something to look forward to with their longer form matches. Obviously, mostly just a cavalcade of power moves here, leading to obviously the Tope Suicida, which was a big spot, and then their finisher, which I don't know what they're going to call it up there. I've got it. I heard it and I forgot to write it down, and it's not hitting me and it's killing me.
The but War anyway. Raid? They could call it the War Raid.
War Raid. I mean, why not? Just go full on with it. The Dozer Scoop. That's what they did. The Dozer Scoop.
No, that's Heavy Machinery.
I know, but they were doing it to them, so that's why they were okay.
That's true. Yeah. The Dozer Scoop. Got it.
All right. I do have a lot of alternate names for the War Raiders. I'm going to let you go and pick up this match first, and then I will get to our alternate War Raiders names.
War Raiders Squash. War Raiders. War. Tom, screw this name up. I can't even pronounce it anymore. WRs. I don't know what to do with these guys. Hanson and Rose squashed Heavy Machinery, which made me sad. It was expected and predictable.
Sad. Oh my gosh.
You know how I'm a big fan of Dozer and Scoop.
I do. I don't get it, but I feel good for those guys. They're fine. They're fine.
No, because now they have like two or three losses, and their record's just ruined, and they're just destined to be mid-carders or low-end jobbers at this point. You don't know. They're on the path to greatness.
Okay, you're right. I don't know that.
Dozer and Scoop, if you're listening, I miss you guys.
Okay, let's get to some alternate War Raiders names. This is from one of our regulars, Michael McGivern. I've put more thought into this than the entire NXT creative staff. Number one, Row Machine. Number two, Cause and Play. I love that one. Three, the Hanson Family. Four, the Rural Jurors. I'm not going to explain that one because I want the people who get what that is to get it. Or maybe I will. Maybe I'll break down. Number five, the Gore Norsemen. Okay,
that's I like great. That one.
That's great. Five, Stubby Mike Knox and Chubby Carl Anderson.
Accurate.
Number six, War Paint. Accurate also. Seven, Row Raiders, and that's R-O-H Raiders. I assume I'm supposed to say Row. But yeah, ROH Raiders.
Clever, very clever.
Yep. Eight, the Great Danes. Nine, Raiders of the Internet Marks. And ten, the Vikings of Wrestling. That's cute also. Obviously, I think the Gore Norseman is the... I don't know if that's obvious. There's a lot of good stuff here. He had two number fives. I don't know if anybody noticed that. I didn't. He apparently had 11. Gore Norseman, oh, that's great. Rural Jurors made me laugh. Yeah, thank you, Michael, for all that lunacy. And Jeff said, the safe bet would be either Warmongers or something different with Warcry. Yeah, I know, but we've seen questionable name choices work like Velveteen Dream. He makes a good point there, because Velveteen Dream is the kind of name where I bet somebody pitched it and at least one person at the table was like, is that going to work? So you never know. You never do know. But yeah, I've seen worse. I really do. We were talking about this one before the show, and Justin wasn't so keen on Warcry. I actually really like Warcry. I think it sounds better than War Raiders, and it has kind of this similar feel. So
the more I marinate on this, I could see Warcry being the name of the finishing move.
Okay.
When I was joking about War Raid, I actually had Warcry in mind, but I didn't want to spoil this email. Warmongers, I like it just because like it gets that second R sound out of the equation.
Right.
That second R sound, I mean, I'm tripping over it. But, you know, I don't want to wear out the R key on my keyboard typing up these reports. It's an important key. Warcry, just anything that's not... War Raiders. Right. War Raiders is the Lacey Evans theme song of Team Raiders.
We only get to use that joke for a few more weeks. So
we no, have. Because we're going to continue using it, and it's going to become a thing.
Okay.
So and this is and people remember it. You know, it'll be like the Shockmaster, right? Like the Shockmaster had his like half a segment of fame. And right. To this day, Shockmaster is... you know, a reference point. And I want, you know, Lacey Evans. I think Lacey Evans' theme song will become...
But Shockmaster was, like, very successful as a wrestler before that for quite a while as Tugboat and Typhoon, so...
He was so successful, I was aware of him as a kid.
There you go.
And I didn't watch wrestling, and we used to make fun of and beat up the kids who watched wrestling.
Wow. That is unfortunate.
I play with G.I. Joes, thank you very much.
I never did. Oh, that's so much lamer than wrestling. we hadn't worked heel on each other yet this episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm rolling my eyes over here.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
Okay, so Machinery versus Raiders. Not a lot to say on that match. It was what we thought it would be. Let's talk about the ladies. Dakota Kai, Vanessa Bourne, Shayna Baszler, and Nikki Cross all got involved in one seamless segment that was all together as one. Once again, we got Kai doing her thing, beating Vanessa Bourne, who apparently is going to be like an S&M character. Like, is that what she's wearing? I don't know.
It's called a negligee for starters.
Yeah, I know. It's
Are you sure? Yeah, I know. All I could think of was like dated reference Twin Peaks, Audrey Hepburn.
We just haven't seen anything like that in a wrestling ring for a while. Not from somebody who was being pushed in a semi-serious manner. Not that she's ever won. I don't think, but
It looked like she had half of Lacey Evans' old outfit with the garters and because Lacey Evans does the garter thing too. Really, it was just hers was the black and red pleather as opposed to, and see that's why it's not really an S&M thing, right. But I don't even want to get into this, but. I don't know. I don't understand
her. You're the two guys who need to just shut this down and not talk about it.
I don't understand her. I don't understand her outfit. I don't understand. Like, her character is just supposed to be this mouthy person, I guess, because she mouthed off to Dakota. I don't get it.
She's mouthy. I mean, that's all there is so far. I'm sure stuff will be added. I think she's doing okay.
She's a jobber.
There's a long way to go. And yes, she's a jobber. Okay, this all led into the Shayna appearance, which I thought was just dynamite by all players involved. It was so good by all people involved. Dakota really, really is doing a great job of selling that fear. Shayna is doing a good job of preying upon it and then challenging her by taking out Vanessa Bourne, who, yes, Dakota Kai doesn't like, but you had a face running from something where truly they should be maybe doing the right thing, but she couldn't just because she's paralyzed with fear. She gets tossed to the back where Kathy Kelly gets involved. We're seeing more of her. And she gets interviewed by Kathy Kelly. Obviously doesn't want to talk about Shayna. Shayna shows up again. And then Nikki Cross laughs because we don't see very much of Nikki Cross. So where is this headed?
Fatal four way.
Oh, God. We don't need another one. But... yeah, make it a five-way with Kathy Kelly in the mix.
And Bianca Belair.
She was there. Yeah, why not? The more the merrier.
The only thing that would have made this segment better is if it had a dose of Bianca Belair.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I just don't know where to fit her. Like, you don't want her taking...
Yeah, I don't know how she guy. Gets into this without muddling up the picture. We love Bianca on this show.
I can't even picture Dakota Kai picking up a win against Belair. I'm sorry.
Yeah, not at this point the way they're being portrayed, but I'm sure they will not run into one another anytime soon, unless there is a spot where Kai loses because of perhaps some kind of...
Shayna Baszler.
Yeah. So, I mean, something like that could happen. I don't think we are far from the Dakota Kai explode and just kick the crap out of Shayna once or just totally snap. And I don't know, maybe we are, maybe it's a couple away. I've got to assume, and I know we've talked about this, that Shayna is probably going to do something with the Four Horsewomen perhaps as soon as this Survivor Series. I mean, might as well make use of that while Ronda Rousey's story is still hot. So, I don't know. I think she'll probably lose the title in June or August at TakeOver, and that'll be the time.
I just fantasy booked the Four Horsewomen of MMA versus the Four Horsewomen of WWE.
Oh, yeah. I've thought that that's where they were headed for a long time. And I actually talked about that on my other podcast, but I thought maybe it was on this one. So maybe it must have been the other one. but, yeah, this is – I definitely think that's something that they're working toward or at least have thought about. Now, the trick is going to be
– Jessamine Duke and Roderick Strong's wife.
Yep, that'll be part of it. That'll be part of the trick. The other part of the trick will be making sure that ideally you've got all the Four Horsewomen of WWE working on the same side at that time. Or maybe that'll just be a part of the interesting story, is that one is working heel and the rest are all face. But regardless, I think that that could be dynamite if they go that way. And it'll be something that the fans really, really get into. So that could be a really fun thing to do.
Oh, I mean, just the star power in that ring.
Yeah, and just the star power of the concept. It's not often that they have two teams where you're like, these are real teams. Like, this isn't just some thrown together thing.
Yeah, like, or, we're on Team SmackDown.
Yeah,
we're on Team Monday Night versus Team Tuesday Night.
These are completely made up groupings, but like, these, the idea of Four Horsewomen versus Four Horsewomen is just absolutely perfect. So hopefully that is the way that's going to go. But let's not lose.
You could have Ric Flair as a mouthpiece for one side.
Yeah.
And then maybe Kurt Angle repping the other.
Yeah, I suppose that might make sense.
Yeah.
They got that history worked in. It'd be better if it could be Piper, but ain't going to be Piper. So let's talk about the women. They were it was great, right? I mean, maybe we already covered that, but I covered my piece on it. Anything you wanted to add? Anything I missed?
I mean, I'm just running out of superlatives to describe my reception to this Dakota Kai Shayna Baszler thing. I just love the way Dakota Kai, because Dakota Kai had this confidence in her match. And she won the match, and she was feeling great. And then Baszler's music hit, and there's just this transformation. Mm-hmm. And then like Baszler, I think Baszler, she's still got a couple issues with her delivery of lines sometimes, where she sounds slightly nervous. But this was definitely a case of less is more.
Yeah, and simple with her, and I think that's what you want to do with an ass kicker.
Yeah, and her body language is so on point, and Dakota Kai carried this on point, and Kathy Kelly was on point. And then when I heard Nikki Cross making those noises, I actually thought Baszler had shown up again. And then it panned to Nikki Cross, and then that brings that intrigue of, where does Cross fit in? Is Cross going to help? Is Cross going to be like the Dark Yoda to Dakota Kai's, like, Luke Skywalker, but take her to, like, the dark side of the Force?
Oh, you know? Maybe that is the... Oh, man.
Like, that's how I booked that. I had, like, Nikki Cross be like, look, there's no way you're going to beat Shayna Baszler with your goody-goody attitude. Let's take you to insanity.
Man, okay.
And then they spend like a couple
I
months.
I love them so much for writing this, but yeah.
Then they spend a couple months in like the Woken Matt Hardy compound place. Okay. Come back with a detour to Sister Abigail's shed, and come back and Dakota Kai is just like this killer. She's like the female Luke Harper, complete with the dirty white T-shirt.
Wow, that would be a slightly different look for her compared to what she's doing now.
With the sweat stains and everything.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if she can sweat as much as old Luke. He's
No, she'll wear his T-shirt as a dress.
He sweats great. Oh, okay.
As a dress.
Well, that makes sense. And then she can start doing his Twitter feed, too. It's Monday. You know what that means. It's Tuesday. You know what that means. I don't know if any of you guys have ever looked at Luke Harper's Twitter feed.
Tom doesn't like Luke Harper's stuff enough for it to pop up on my Twitter notifications.
Yeah, there's no reason to put likes on it anymore. He literally does the same thing every day. He says what day it is, and he says, you know what that means. And he's been doing it for months and months and months. I think he still does it. I haven't looked, but I think he still does it. And if not, he did it for a very, very long time. All right. Raul Mendoza versus EC3, and EC3 was on the mic afterwards. I still like what he says. I still don't love the way he says it. I think he's got a long way to go before he actually sounds believable on the mic, but I like what he says. I will say that I started thinking, I can't believe how hard it is for an arrogant character to get booed these days. Like, it's so insane. It's when you talk to people, they claim that is their least favorite quality in a person. But people who are arrogant characters in wrestling just for the last handful of years, they just get cheered so hard, and I don't know how to fix that problem, because if you take that away from heels, then what's left? I don't know. There's cruelty, I suppose, but it's so hard to be a heel right now. When somebody puts out that arrogance, it's so rare it gets healed, gets cheered, or gets booed. And I think it was you who said, maybe it was Tom who said, it's so silly that an auditorium full of people was chanting 1%. like that's not how it works. Kind of unintentional humor there. But I don't know. I think as a character, he's kind of working, or he's getting there to a point where he'll potentially be a highlight of the show. But go ahead with this match with Raul, who's great but has never won on WWE TV, and EC3, who has only been winning since his return. Oh, wait, that's not...
Other than that ladder match where he arguably had the least amount of offense in the match.
That's true.
You know, Raul Mendoza and Fabian Aichner are these two people who have just gobs of talent. It's so obvious every time they get in the ring. They truly do maximize their minutes. And it's just unfortunate that WWE has zero spot for them, because these guys just have so much talent. Every time I see Raul Mendoza, I say, I want to see more of this guy. I want to see them give him a decent character. I want to see him get more time in the ring. I just like the guy. EC3 on this heel thing, I use my 10-year-old son as my barometer on this stuff. My kid thinks that EC3 is a face.
Oh, wow.
Right. I mean, this is the kid that, I mean, when he saw Shinsuke Nakamura low blow AJ Styles, I think he was about to like ask me for a lighter so he could set his Shinsuke Nakamura shirt on fire. My kid is the biggest mark in wrestling history, and he thinks EC3 is a babyface. So there's something wrong in the presentation. Right? I mean, he says the heelish stuff, but he does it like with this knowing kind of smirk, like I'm in on the joke too. Or there's just something about his delivery, and I love him. Right? I love his character. At least, you know, maybe it's because I have such fond memories of Derek Bateman, which was in so many ways the same character, just the knowing smirk was deliberate.
Right.
And there's just something about it, and he's got that Adam Cole problem where he came from, you know, another circuit where fans loved him. If Cody were to ever come to NXT, he's going to have the exact same issue, right?
Yep,
right? Fans love this guy. It doesn't matter what the character. They're cheering the entertainer, and he's a cool heel. He's got this arrogance, but it's like the arrogance of a winner, where you're like, well, I can't really dispute it. You are a winner.
And he delivers funny, like truly funny lines sometimes.
Yeah, it's like you are truly funny, and you are attractive, and you are... You know, you do have impressive physique, and you do have a good move set, and you aren't cheating to win. And yeah, you're arrogant, but you've earned the arrogance. You took a beating in that ladder match, a heck of a beating in that ladder match. Despite the arrogance, it's hard to boo. It needs some tweaks.
Yeah.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I will say, despite, I don't know, the interview may have been imperfect in some ways, I love the fact that the interview existed. The idea of the post-immediate post-match outside interview, I love. I love. Let's see a little bit more of it. I don't have to see it all the time, but a guy on his way up or somebody who's just lost a major match that is a turning point in their careers, absolutely. Let's do this a little more. Let's have Kathy Kelly out there. I love what she's doing already. I loved it when they first hired her and wondered why the heck she was so shunted to the back, and I love what she's doing now. So, let's just keep up this idea. Whoever's really doing the hard writing on NXT right now, and I know it's Triple H's baby, but I'm sure many people are involved. It's really, really working. That was very cool. The only thing I think I really didn't cover, two things. One, the Street Profits hype video, which I thought was a good way to make them look like they're getting serious, and now they're pissed off. We've got Dunn, Burch, and Lorcan. I loved this bit in the backstage.
Oh, yes.
Where Lorcan comes to him, and Dunn doesn't say anything, and they explain. He goes, you know you're a piece of garbage, right?
And he nods.
He shrugs. He shrugs. He's like, yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
And he does it in a way that still, yes, he's still in character, and he acknowledges it, and it's like, what are you going to do? He knows that's what. God, the Dunn character is so perfect. He's so perfect. This is another guy just like Dream, which is a perfect marriage of character and portrayer. And maybe to the point where I'm almost like, Dunn's got to kind of just be like his character. Maybe, I don't know. To some degree, at least he's got to have that edge. He's obviously got edge because he wrestles with hate. That's all I can say. He wrestles with hate. So I'm really looking forward to this six-man that we'll see next week that Tom saw this week, right? I think that's how that would have worked.
Yeah.
I think that this was the end of that taping. So, Tom has already seen that match. So, lucky him. I think that'll be fun. And, between that and the Street Profits, was there anything else you wanted to add?
Oh, man, this promo just really did it. It's like you said. Dunn is such a treasure. He is a national treasure. I think the queen should just move ahead and knight him before she dies.
Right.
Because he deserves it. He may very well be the regal of his generation in so many ways. And I like the way Oni and Danny were stomping around. They're angry. I love the way they question. I love Oni. You know, you're a piece of trash.
Right.
He
did that well. Dunn didn't say a word.
Didn't say a word. And he
and
was,
it
the,
was perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. He nailed his lines without saying a word. And it was such a cool promo. I love these guys. I can't wait for this match. You're going to have six really strong hands at the ring. I'm not sure how I feel about Burch yet.
Oh, I like Burch a lot.
I like Burch, but you know, it's what I want to see is I want to see more of that strong style from Burch because he just hasn't had enough minutes to really let that.
Yeah, I know you've primarily seen him in position to lose. Did you see the UK tournament when they did it?
No, I missed that one. And
he lost in the first round, but I want to say he got a lot of minutes.
Yeah,
he was good.
I can tell he has that British strong style in him. It's just he hasn't had the chance to show it yet, so I want to see that from him, and this match could be the opportunity. But, you know, he's going to be one who's isolated for an extended stretch.
Yeah. Yeah, he'll probably play Ricky Morton in this one, I assume. Be the face in peril, maybe.
Yeah.
And Pete's going to get the hot tag.
Yep. And deliver a bitter end to Roderick Strong.
Yeah, I mean, that would be right. Or maybe they'll pull that off. I don't know.
Yeah, and then, well, I could see him hitting the bitter end, and then, like, then O'Reilly and Cole yank Strong out of the ring or something, and they run to the back, get a count out. Something like that.
All right. Yep, so we have one more email to get to. This is from Philip Bagley. This is Philip from D.C. My question is about the Undisputed Era. Assuming that at some point UE will break up, do you think that the group will turn on Strong once Bobby Fish is healthy? I'll start that bit right away. I don't. I don't think that they put Strong in the group just to do a quick double turn. I think that this is going to be a better spot for Roderick Strong as a heel, but in a group so he doesn't have to do the heavy lifting from a talking standpoint. He can have other guys do that. I think that's a great, great spot for him. And if anybody gets turned on, I think it'll be Fish, because he will feel pinched out of the group. And the only reason, I know I said this last week or the week before, I think the only reason that I doubt that'll happen is Fish and O'Reilly are just so good at as a tag team. They've had their reps all over the world, and I don't think it makes sense to break them up, even if storyline-wise it might make sense to bring them up.
I'll say that one thing that NXT does from time to time again is they surprise us on the booking, and I know that the 3 or 4 man faction disintegrating is such a well-trod path in wrestling. But I think that NXT has shown, the Wyatt family went up to the main roster as a group. Mm-hmm. Sanity, granted, they shed Nikki Cross, but it wasn't because they split up. It was just obviously somebody needed Nikki Cross to stay in NXT because she is main roster ready. Yeah. They need her to stay in NXT, but they didn't break up. Sanity was around, a year and a half, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Not even, other than Sawyer Fulton getting kicked out because he had the injury. There was never any internal strife. I think that NXT has done these long-running groups. The Ascension never broke up. AOP
did kick out Ellering, but that has more to do with Ellering. I have no idea.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was what it was, but it wasn't like they broke up Akam and Rezar. In fact, I'd have to say it's much more common that we see tag teams not split up in NXT. The tag teams on the team that split up, notable to it was Neville and Graves. Yeah, Graves turning on Neville, which was a great heel turn.
Yep. Oh. And now we've got maybe Sabatelli and Moss splitting, but even they haven't been able to keep to that. So
they don't even count. But
not enough wins to matter.
Yeah, nobody cares about Sabatelli and Moss. So I looked at it and I said, yeah, keep these guys together, send them up to the main roster together. Like you said, Roderick Strong's weak point has been the mic, and in the group settings, he gets a couple lines. He's effective. Where he's not trying to carry an entire promo by himself. I'm fine with it. Keep them together.
Philip continues, how do you think that the faction would translate to the main roster if the entire group went up together? Kind of a Ring of Honor rendition of the Radicals. I will say, let's not overly romanticize the Radicals, just because right now, I bring this up every now and then when it's relevant. I am watching all the WWE pay-per-views in order. And right now I am 6 months to a year into the Radicals run, and they lose most of the time. they lose most of their matches. And it should have worked better than it did. Now, granted, it worked really well for Eddie and for Benoit for as long as it did. I don't know that as a group, that's like the measuring stick, but in WWE, where they've never really shown a long-term commitment to factions in the way that NWA and WCW did, I just don't know. I don't know how that'll work, because I don't know if it's because of Vince's itchy trigger finger. I don't know why that is, but those groups just never last. We've got a couple of groups of women right now, but we've seen what did they call the Bellas and Alicia Fox? I can't even think of their name anymore. They had Team PCB, which was just first initials. They've always found reasons to split these groups relatively quickly before they're even paid off doing anything.
Absolution lasted a couple months.
Yeah, and she got hurt. Those two are still, are they still working together? I don't know if they're going to work together.
Lay Cool lasted a while.
That's true.
And what were Natalya and Phoenix together? What were they called?
Oh, I don't know.
I can't remember, not the Chick Magnets. Who are the Chick Magnets? I'm thinking of CM Punk.
Right.
And the Miz's Pants for a while when he was with Morrison. What were they called? I can't remember what they're called, but yeah, Natalya and Phoenix were around for a bit of time. Caitlin and AJ had that not really pairing, but they were a friendship for a while. But you know the Iconics. I mean, the Iconics lasted together like 2 years as, you know, NXT, and you know they're going to split up in like 6 months on the main roster.
So apparently Beth Phoenix and Natalya were the Divas of Doom.
That's it,
so
the Divas of Doom.
The reason we didn't remember is because it was Level 20 Awful as a name. It was really bad.
Yeah.
And I love both of them,
they
too.
They couldn't even be a full legion. They were just the Divas of Doom.
Yeah, not enough people for a legion. They didn't have their Paul Ellering. That's unfortunate.
They lack spiked football padding.
That was it. That was the missing thing to get him over as the all-time great.
Oh, Beth Phoenix is still my favorite main roster diva of all time.
Oh, she's dynamite. I loved her. I was sad when she left, but you know, leave before the business kills you. Why not? So yeah, she's married to Edge now. Seems happy. She's a Hall of Famer, and I couldn't be happier about that. So yeah, Beth Phoenix. Big fans. There's our memory lane for the week. We do that a lot at the end of the show, but, you know, we do tend to ramble. So that's it, I think. That's what we got. Harley right now is not here because he is covering War of the Worlds. That's why he's not here. Tom is at the taping. So next week, I want to say it's me and those two guys, but I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, it's my turn to rotate up. Does Harley know that this is just a radio program and that the aliens aren't really invading New Jersey?
I don't know. I guess we'll find out if Harley has, like, defected to America by tonight. We'll know.
She is Canadian, yeah.
He is. So we'll find out if he thinks that this is real aliens or not. Oh, H.G. Wells. I am no relation, but it's spelled the same. So that is our show. Unless you got anything else, drop that Twitter handle one more time and we'll get out of here.
I am Justin_M_James, and I do not have anything else for the night.
All right. I am at Spooky Milk, and I'm going to go have a drink and hang out with my daughter before she goes to bed. And that is our show. We'll see you next week with the Six Man. I'm excited, guys. All right. Cheers.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free editions of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.